Back in 1963, everybody knew that blues was a type of music played by old black guys on acoustic guitars, and that if you were white and sincere, you could play the blues too. Of course, by 1963, it had been a while since any of the great electric blues men, like Muddy Waters or Otis Rush, had had a hit, so the poor, deluded college students in their folk music societies could be forgiven for thinking this. But there were other white musicians who had found that their love of rock and roll led them to electric blues, both here and in England. And when the Rolling Stones came out, playing some of this stuff, not very well, these people thought, but with some feeling, it was a kick in the pants. Now, folk music had been very successful commercially, and the Rolling Stones were up there with the Beatles, at least in England, so some U.S. labels started fishing around for some white blues players. Paul Butterfield Blues Band, an integrated group from the south side of Chicago, the university, and the ghetto, was signed to Elektra, a folk label, early in 1965, but their raw power scared the folkies at the label, and this early session with Michael Bloomfield on piano was shelved after it was recorded. Elektra's competition, Vanguard, had no such compunctions and found what they were looking for in the Gaslight, one of Bob Dylan's favorite hangouts.
You love me, darling. Please call me on the phone sometime. Yeah, you say you love me, darling. Please call me on the phone sometime.
John Hammond was the son of the famous record executive of the same name. And for this recording, his hand-picked band included Charlie Musselwhite, the Chicagoan, on harmonica, Mark Levon Helm from Arkansas on drums, and Jamie Robert Robertson and Eric Garth Hudson, Canadians, on guitar and organ, respectively. This was just a pickup group for the record, though. Hammond's usual backup was Jimmy James and the Blue Flames, featuring a weird young black guitarist who played left-handed and called himself Jimmy James because Jimi Hendrix didn't sound quite right. Still, he was a fine blues guitarist.
Well, I wish I was a catfish swimming in love, the deep blue sea. I have all you pretty women fishing after me, showing up after me.
In England, the scene was a little different. Blues had been a part of the jazz scene there since the mid-50s, thanks to Alexis Korner, a tireless propagandizer for electric and acoustic blues. More artistically solid than pop music in the minds of musicians, blues was a calling, like the priesthood, and when a guitarist appeared who could play it, they called him God. Clapton had quit the Yardbirds because he didn't want to play pop music, and here we hear him with a pickup band that included Jack Bruce and Stevie Winwood. Shortly after this session, Clapton joined John Mayall's Blues Breakers, who attempted to bring relatively authentic blues to the pop charts, and succeeded in Britain anyway.
Kissing is kissing.
The thing was, over here, record companies were scared of this music, believe it or not. Elektra'd recorded Butterfield, Clapton, and several others, but never released the recordings until the Newport Folk Festival had been galvanized by Bob Dylan, with the Butterfield Band backing him in his first Elektra appearance. Only then, when the Butterfield Band had released its first album, did record companies make the first feeble attempts. Goldberg Miller Blues Band, featuring Barry Goldberg and Steve Miller, for instance, wasn't exactly what the fans wanted. Not even the highly commercial New York-based Blues Project sold many records. The blues revival of the mid-60s was mainly important because so many people started playing guitar as a result of it, and because, with virtuosos like Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, Mike Bloomfield, and Johnny Winter inspiring them, they began to push the boundaries of rock and roll even further.